If you're like most people, you feel just a few more dollars could solve all your problems. You feel trapped between paydays and struggling to make ends meet. Well, sometimes people try to print up a few of their own, and most of the time they're caught by the law. But even if you could do it and do it legally, what you may not realize is it would not solve any of your financial problems. It would actually make them much worse. Money is two things. It's a medium of exchange and a standard of value. And yet money is something you can't eat. When you take a look at the history of money, you absolutely have to be dumbfounded at what men have used for money in the past.
Money is a medium of exchange. Throughout recorded history, hundreds of odd and curious items have served man as money. In the primitive forms of trade, shells, ornamental beads, and wampum were used to purchase the scarce items needed for survival. Beads, food, basket materials changed hands many times as men sought to make their lives more comfortable. Among the more valuable monies were obsidian flakes, used to make knives and arrowheads, and flint or metal axe heads, necessary for building shelters and providing meat by hunting wild game. Rare or hard to get items, such as rattlesnake skins, eagle claws, bonefish hooks, shark's teeth, and even monkey teeth, were considered more valuable. Just about anything can be used for money if you have confidence in it. Metal in the form of ornaments, jewelry, decorative pieces, or useful implements and tools still serve many peoples today as money. Possibly the most bizarre example is the stone money of Yap. The stones have no intrinsic value, yet they have remained perhaps the world's most stable currency. The history of money and man has been the search for the perfect monetary system. A system providing stability, confidence, portability, and intrinsic value. Clever designs for weights and measures were used in ancient Siam. Coinage as we know it today began with these early civilizations. But man's common use of precious metal money has rarely lasted long. The silver dollar, the gold double eagle, the other lovely and precious coins from nations around the world are not in general circulation today. They never have been for long. The Romans were the first to clip their beautiful silver coins, and today we have followed their example. Sandwich coins are the rule in modern America. Historically, man has progressed rapidly from what is called hard currency, or money with genuine value, to soft currency, or confidence money. Like checkbooks and credit cards, paper money issued by the government is easier to carry around than gold or silver. Plus, confidence money or paper money is easier to print than gold and silver are to mine. So today we have countless examples of worthless paper money. Many collectors have examples of our own Confederate money. The confidence money in World War II Germany is a textbook example of runaway inflation. Post-war Germany reverted to the barter system and cigarette money to end inflation. Every nation today is suffering from inflation, and yet we all continue to print more money than there is value to back it. America has gone from barter to implements to coins. We have gone from coins to gold-backed paper to pure confidence money. As inflation erodes our money and our confidence, where will we go from here?
Maybe we'll finally go back to the millstones of Yap, because after all, that's still working among those people there. But man has never found a perfect monetary system. How well a monetary system works depends entirely upon human character, the character of the people using it. There are many benefits to using money, obviously, over a barter system of trade. One, money does not require a matching of wants. such as the values that might shift dramatically between a sack of groceries and part of a cow. Barter discourages specialization because of the inconvenience of trade, and our technology depends upon specialization and assembly lines. In a barter economy, value is difficult to judge because of so many prices and conflicting terms. Is a cow really worth 2 bushels of corn, or 4 bushels of apples, or 8 pairs of shoes, or 4 tires, or 1 automobile, or just what? And of course, if you go back to the trading days of early American settlers and the Indians, you can see a fantastic disparity between what one type of person may think something is worth and someone else. But there's a definite benefit then in using money. But if we use money, what kind of money? And what is money after all, and what is behind it? I have some examples right here that shows you what we call solid metal, or the real valuable monies that people are very excited about buying today as a hedge against inflation, which they feel is certainly coming. I have examples of real British sovereigns, of Mexico's 50 peso pieces, of the Austrian kronas, which I will show you, of U.S. $20 gold pieces, and these silver bars. Now, these silver bars, and they are actually the real item that I'm holding up here, are very, very heavy. I think if I can get the light to reflect just right, you will see the U.S. government seal right here. And this says it is 0.999 plus fine right up here in the corner. That is worth about $500 according to the latest statistics I can give you today. Now, that may change by the time this program is over. This, and believe it or not, they are real. And this is the biggest pile of money I've ever seen in one place in my life, by the way, courtesy of coin dealers in the Southern California area who have allowed us to have these props temporarily, probably at great fright to them. But these are the double eagles, the United States of America coin, $20 gold piece. This says 1904 on it. And this, I understand, at the current price that they're quoting right now is worth about $300. $300 a piece, and here's a whole stack of them, and they are the genuine item, as I said before. These are the Austrian kronas that are being sold today, and these are about $190 in value at the present rate of exchange, as I talk to you. The British sovereigns, these are much smaller, as you can see, and these, again, are the genuine article. You can see the front and the back there, and they're worth about $52. The Mexican 50 peso piece, and the ring of these coins, the slight variation in the color from the Austrian, the American double eagle, or the British sovereign, and this, of course, Mexican 50 peso piece is noteworthy. There's slightly different colors of gold, but they're all pure gold. And this one is now valued at $250 as I talk to you, but that might change. After all, when you look at this money, it is beautiful, isn't it? And people would sure love to get their hands on a whole pile of it, because that is roughly about $60,000 worth right there. Hope the door is locked while we do this program. But you know, that is used to buy the things that people need. The story that you saw in that film clip about the World War II inflationary currency of West Germany, or of Germany per se, is told in these little printed pieces of paper. This was 50 pfennig, or 50 cents, paper money, that began to be printed in the Weimar Republic prior to Hitler's rise. And then finally they brought out a 10,000 mark note, and you can see this paper, and then they went to 5 million marks, and I'll tell you what that was worth a little bit later on. This is 1 million, or rather 10 million, I believe, marks, and then they went to, I just got so out of hand, this is 100 million mark. You would think that that really would buy a lot. Well, we'll tell you in just a minute that it bought practically nothing, actually. This, you will see, is a 1,000 mark note, but then they printed the red over that and made it into a 1 million mark note. They had to change that. Then they went into the printing business to print up ein Milliarde, which is 1 billion marks. That's a 1 billion mark note. And then they had a 5 billion mark note by the time Hitler came to power. That was the inflationary spiral that went absolutely crazy in Germany prior to World War II, and I'll tell you what some of that would purchase just a little bit later on. Our own dollar that I was framed in when we came on this program has gotten worth less and less and less these days. It's interesting when you look into where the dollar came from and its perspective, its role today. For example, did you know that dollar comes from a word which is a German word that means valley, literally? I'll give you the history of that. Although the dollar as a unit of currency came to the American continent in the form of Spain's 8 reales, or the storied pieces of 8, the name itself originated with a large silver coin that was called the Joaquin Thaler, or which came from Joaquin Thaler, which meant valley. For instance, the word Neanderthal. We were doing some programs recently on the subject of evolution and fossil man. That is a German word for valley, Tal, T-H-A-L. And so when that Joaquin Thaler made its appearance about 1518 in a Bohemian mint located in the valley, or Thal, of St. Joaquin, these Thalers, or valleys actually, rapidly gained favor throughout all of Europe, and the name, modified according to the speech of the individual countries, began to take place, such as Daalder in Holland, Dollar, I don't know how to pronounce that, in Scandinavia, and Dollar, the way we pronounce it, in England. The word appears at least twice in Shakespeare's plays, hence the name of our dollar, the Yankee dollar, as it is known around the world, and confidence in that dollar is eroding very, very markedly today. Well, the paper money we use is fiat money. That is, it's merely confidence money. It's only good so long as people have confidence in it. It's only good because the government says it is. You accept your wages in paper because you have confidence you can spend it. And so American currency is 2% coin, and those, of course, have been clipped, or as we say, sandwich money, 10% paper currency, and 78% in checking accounts. Dollar-wise, about 90% of all transactions are done by check, and people never see the money one way or the other. It's just a massive floating of paper back and forth. The government has not declared checks legal tender, but they perform the vast bulk of the economy's trades because of confidence in our banking and monetary system.
Take a good look at this 1886 silver dollar. This may be the last time you'll see one moving so slowly. With today's inflation rate, it's going to take hard-nosed money management for most of us to make it. Managing your personal finances successfully is one of the toughest challenges you face, and we'd like to help. We've prepared a handy booklet with 6 keys to keeping tight control on your income and expenses. Best of all, managing your personal finances is free. Request your copy today by dialing this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. Managing your personal finances.
Inflation is money's greatest enemy, and of course inflation looms on the horizon in front of the United States of America, and for that matter, Western Europe and a great deal of the world right now. There's a fantastic story in the pouring of money into the Arab oil-rich countries, which is another subject, but an important one. But going back to what happened and what really led to World War II, inflation in Germany. Denominations in thousands of marks were replaced by notes in the millions of marks, and finally in the hundreds of millions of marks. It was the wildest runaway inflation in all of world history up to that time, and it consumed the entire economic and social fabric of that country. Bread was 200 billion marks a loaf, and a newspaper cost 100 billion marks. 3 billion were required to mail a letter. A workman who had formerly been paid by the month would be paid by the week. And then finally, as inflation grew worse, he was paid every day. And finally, things were changing and fluctuating so rapidly that workmen in the factories of Germany were paid by the hour. The workman would be working away at his desk or his die or his drill or the automobile, and at the end of each hour, a bell would ring and payroll clerks would push currency-laden carts through German plants that were still trying to operate. Bundles of 1,000 and 10,000 mark notes were deposited on every desk and bench, and by the time the next hour came around again, prices had doubled. When it was all over on November 20th, 1923, the Reichsbank admitted that the money supply had grown from 2 billion marks to over 500 quintillion marks, give or take a few trillion. The exchange rate for the mark went from 4.2 marks to the dollar to 4.2 trillion marks to the dollar, and 12 trillion marks to the dollar on the black market. The inflation finally climaxed when the currency became virtually worthless and literally, finally, was worth less than the paper on which it was printed. That's what happens in runaway inflation. Is it going to happen in our day? That's the serious question we face now. Well, we can stand a little bit of inflation, as this chart will show you, up to about 3%. But the chart shows how our money supply has greatly surpassed our gross national product. If you increase the money supply at the same rate as you increase the GNP, or the goods available, prices will remain stable. But take a look at the consumer price index, which does alter very greatly this picture. For the past 35 years, you will see a graph that shows what used to cost 40 cents in 1939 now costs over $1.25. And such an increase is largely the result of inflation. Put another way, the value of the dollar then is being dramatically eroded. Taking 1939 dollars as the standard worth 100 cents, our dollar has declined in value until today. It is actually worth about 25 cents. Who gets hurt from such inflation? How does it affect our national character? Well, just about everybody loses, but the following get hurt more than anybody else. Life insurance companies, annuities, trust funds held by the government for old age pensions, employment and disability insurance and the like, savings deposits, bonds, United States, municipal and corporate, loans secured by mortgages, and currency as well as checking accounts. In terms of real wealth from 1939 until today, Americans have lost from their savings accounts over $1.1 trillion. Who really loses? Well, a recent president of the United States said inflation robs and cheats Americans. According to a recent government report, the majority of all elderly citizens are living in poverty. It's the elderly who have to live from savings, annuities, and pensions. Inflation makes them victims who can least afford the losses attributable to inflation. For instance, the government set a certain amount of income for them, but the skyrocketing consumer price index, the price of their rent and food and so on, goes up, but the government cannot increase the amount of money they're receiving. It's a tiresome and an ugly story. No wonder God says, of our peoples we have oppressed the widows and the orphans. Their savings have contributed to the long-term success of the government's inflationary policies. The fact that their contributions were made without their consent, of course, is an interesting aspect of the matter that makes stealing maybe a more appropriate name for the process. The social and psychological effects of inflation are, of course, evil. Within the span of inflating, shrewd and skillful speculators can climb to the height of economic power. Former middle-class skilled artisans and low-salaried men reduced to poverty, life savings stolen by inflation, and under such circumstances, hard work and thrift fall into disrepute. There's insidious growth of the ever-present desire to get something for nothing. Optimistic hopes are often fulfilled by the course of events during an inflationary progression that men in all walks of life come to feel that they're entitled to much more for their effort than they're giving that they could possibly ever earn in the long run. So when the inevitable aftermath arrives, those who have been most influenced by the effects of inflation are unfitted for grappling with the stern realities of life. Well, the question is, who really loses, and will we ever have another depression?
Do you feel another depression is an eventuality or just a possibility?
I'm afraid it's getting more and more probable an eventuality, and I think that I have always believed that we'll go historically through a type of runaway inflation first before the depression hits. And I see more and more economists now that are tending towards that. There have been in the past a kind of, you know, dichotomy, those that believe we're going to crack right away into a depression and those that believe we'll go through the runaway inflationary stages first. I think that historically the runaway inflation is more likely, and we're seeing this with, you know, every passing day the prices increasing tremendously.
Just what is the cause of the high rate of inflation we're beginning to experience?
Well, there's lots of causes for it. I think probably the primary cause is the increase in the money supply. The federal government, by various government programs and their fractional reserve systems and their borrowing systems and what have you, have to continually spend more money than they take in. Now, you and I can't do that. If we spend more than we make after a very short period of time, we get caught. The government isn't quite as hamstrung as you and I are, and they're able to continually expend more than they take in, what we call deficit spending. And as that deficit spending grows from year to year to year, we have the national debt, which is now $460 to $480 billion, and it keeps going up. So as you increase this money supply, which we've done over 1,250% increase in just the last 32 years, you have more and more dollars out there chasing fewer goods. And of course, then you're spending more dollars for those fewer goods, higher prices, inflation.
Think about the people. Think of revolution. Think about pollution. Think of a solution. Go the words of a current pop song. In these troubled times, is there a source you can turn to for understanding, for solutions to these problems? Yes. And in today's world, you can't afford to not know the answers to the many questions facing us all. For articles on personal finances, family living, and marriage helps, the real meaning behind world news, and advanced news of a better world tomorrow for you and your family, you need to read The Plain Truth, the world's unique human experience and family magazine. Your free subscription to The Plain Truth will begin immediately if you dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. The Plain Truth, after 38 years, still ahead of its time.
It's been said that if there's another depression, paper money will become worthless. Why is this?
I think so. I hold this view myself. The last depression, of course, paper money was worthwhile. For several reasons. There wasn't much of it, which made it valuable. Also, at least initially, it was backed by gold. Now we have no gold backing of our currency. The last depression, we had general circulation of gold and silver coins. Those are now gone. So I believe the scenario, if you will, of the coming economic difficulties into depression will be a runaway inflation first, which will wipe out the value of that currency, and the currency that will be used will be real silver quarters and dimes and halves, etc., and also the gold coins. So I think in the next depression you're going to see a return to real money rather than paper money, which will be of, you know, doubtful value.
What is the best way for an American to hedge against inflation?
Well, he has several inflationary hedges. Even the stock market, as a rule, real estate are generally good inflationary hedges, but that's a normal rate of inflation, which we aren't seeing. It's being far greater than that. So I think to protect himself for the type of inflation that we're into now and what we're looking to in the future, he should be in gold and silver mining stocks, silver coins, gold coins for the numismatic values, silver bullion, platinum, some hard currencies. These different areas. Now, we handle certain of those, not all of them, but we handle a majority of them. And I think that what he has to look forward to in the future is not only profitability, which he's been concerned with in the past, but also safety. What is going to be worth more? What can I get my hands on? And liquidity is going to be very, very important in the future. To be able to pick up that phone and sell out of a certain position of an item, to be able to take physical delivery of it and be able to use those in the marketplace. So profitability, safety, and liquidity, I think, are very important. And I think that the silver coins especially, you know, hit all three of these very, very well.
You still have to point out that even with gold, it is still only money, and that governments determined to inflate can reduce the content of currency by clipping and make the currency partly intrinsic and partly fiat. The essential element, then, is character. Gold backing is an attempt to regulate human nature. If a government has character in handling its money, no gold backing is necessary. But if the government has no character in handling its money, then any gold backing will still be steadily eroded, and eventually the currency becomes absolutely worthless.
Why does your average client feel a need to purchase gold or silver coins?
I think that they fall into two categories. The basic client, which probably makes up 90% of the clientele, are those that are just have lost complete confidence in the currencies. They've lost faith in the dollar, and they're trying to preserve the assets that they have. I don't think that it's a matter of them trying to make a huge profit. or even expecting to make a huge profit, but more to preserve the capital that they have, preserve the assets that they've accumulated up to this point.
How do most of your clients feel about the state of the economy in the future? Is there a mood of optimism, pessimism? How do they?
Extreme pessimism. I'd say that it ranges from the individuals who feel that we're going to have riots in the streets, that there's going to be complete and total runaway inflation, to those individuals that just feel that the inflation is going to get to the point where the economy is going to go into a type of depression, or at least a very serious recession. Very few of our clients are optimistic about the future of the American economy or the future of the world economy. They feel that the United States is now so closely related to all the other countries that in general all the countries are going to have inflationary problems, not just the United States, and therefore they are fleeing into the precious metals for that reason.
There's a question that occurs to me as I listen to gold and silver brokers and those who deal in coin talking about hedging against inflation by buying the coins they have. It makes me wonder why, I'm not putting the gentleman down, I thank them for their interviews, why it is that they want my paper or your paper and they're going to give me their coins. Of course, it all is a game of exchange at the fantastic astronomical rise in the value of these coins over a short period of time. Now, these coins that I have here, a veritable fortune, you might say, a small fortune as some people would look at it, in actual gold and silver metal right here on the desk, there's still something that we have to remember about these. They're beautiful. They're much smaller than the millstone of a yap that I've got behind me. But there's one thing they have in common. You can't eat either one of them. And when our economy goes down the drain, we're probably going to wish that we had listened to a few people like Garner Ted Armstrong, who said we ought to be planting our front yards to carrots and beets, and maybe some of our golf courses too. Because when all of this comes tumbling down in some day, in the not too terribly distant future, and that is the sign, that is what is happening, that is where the world is headed. Western Europe, Japan, the United States, the Middle East, the Arab oil embargoes that now, of course, have been lifted, but the fantastic runaway problem of global pollution, of the population explosion, of the toppling of governments, the loss of confidence of individual peoples in their governments, the world in turmoil today, every sign that led up to the beginning of a world war, whether you're talking World War I or World War II. Every one of those signs are signals that a world war, some kind of disequilibrium which would lead toward a world war, is just around the corner. All of those signs are with us today. Now, if the average American rushes out to hedge against inflation, all in the world he does is ensure that a depression or the complete collapse of the economy is going to be speeded. It reminds me of a scripture back in the book of Ezekiel that says, in the Bible, they shall cast their silver into the streets, and their gold shall be as an unclean thing. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Eternal. The time may well come when even those gold coins will be thrown out as virtually worthless. Right from the booklet you've seen in the magazine. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong. Goodbye, friends.
You have seen Garner Ted Armstrong. For literature offered on this program, send your request to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.